She's Professor Emeritus of Community Medicine and Pediatrics and recently served as the Director of Global Health. I didn't know this, Judy, but she was actually the first Robert Wood Johnson Model School Health Program and did a lot related to school health in Connecticut. Then she has also conducted research and training in over 50 countries, including Haiti, Sri Lanka, Costa Rica, Tanzania, Turkmenistan, Puerto Rico, Sierra Leone, Malaysia. She's directed the MPH practicum and the dual degree program, and she's advised and done thesis and capstone projects with over 60 MPH students on global health projects. She's really known in global health right now, for sure. She's the co-author of Health of Women and Mothers and Children, Understanding Global Medicine and Health. As I said, the co-chair of her MCH section, chair of the board of Core Health, and MCH advisor to the Haitian Health Foundation. So we couldn't have found a better person to come and now kind of give some overview from the global perspective. Judy.
Thank you. I think we all need a minute to reflect on what we just heard, and I think that it's difficult, it's emotional, and we should be very touched by it, but I also think it exemplifies the very best in public health, because it's understanding the problem, from the perspective of the people who have experienced it, and it's engaging in multi-sectoral approaches to do something about it. So my commendations. So I'm going to talk, and again, we have short time, and obviously we're all very passionate about what we have to talk about. So I'm going to tell you what my key messages are to begin with, and then I will come back and tell you about them again at the end. But I hope by the end of this you will understand that most maternal and child deaths in the world are preventable, even though they occur on a scale that is much larger than anything we know in this country. And that equity, as we've been talking about at this meeting, is a critical issue. And that includes women's equality. It includes not just access to care. We talk a lot about access to care. We don't talk a lot about quality of care. What are people getting? And we don't talk a lot about choice. Many populations in this country do have a lot of choice about what kind of services that they get. And we count just can you get a service or not in global health. And again, there are many marginalized and vulnerable populations in global health, much as we've heard about in Boston and in terms of the sex trade. I also think it's important, again, as we just heard, to talk about a continuum of care. Communities are really important to everything that we do. Sometimes in global health, the fix is at the health systems level, and the health system doesn't include the community, and I think it's important that we understand that if we're going to advocate clearly. And then to get civil society involvement and to have that political will that Debbie talked about in the overview. Without the political will and without the accountability of the services that people receive, it's not going to work. So I'm going to do a quick kind of overview of some of the global health issues. Some of it's going to sound very familiar, maybe not in scale, but in terms of what some of the issues are to domestic health issues, and which my heart is also there too. So the Beijing Declaration in 1995 said that all these governments signed on and said that women's equality was really important for the well-being of humanity. That was a long time ago, and we still don't really have women's equality. So I think we have a long way to go. So that's one of the foundations of global health, and the other one is the Millennium Development Goals, which Debbie talked about too, in terms of the main goal was to reduce extreme poverty, but there were eight other specific and targeted measures, much like our Healthy People process. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that. How many people know about those Millennium Development Goals already? Quite a few. Okay, so I won't spend a lot of time on them. How about A Promise Renewed? People know what that is. A Promise Renewed is a UNICEF initiative because we're not going to meet certain of those 2015 goals to make sure that no children die of preventable deaths, to keep this on the agenda as we move forward. Unfortunately, from my perspective, it only includes children and not the mothers of those children who are pretty important to their lives and also the family, but it's a beginning. There's a lot of talk right now about what the post 2015 MGG goals are going to be. It's not clear that there may be more than one health goal overall. So you'll see there are a lot of health goals in 8. And a lot of them are going to be on important things about the social determinants of health. But I think we need to keep our dual vision on about some of these things. And I'm just going to give you a little bit about kind of what's going on right now. So the thing about the Millennium Development Goals that we all need to know is that the three goals that are not going to be reached are the ones that affect maternal and child health the most directly. All of them affect maternal and child health. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about those three goals. So the first one is to eliminate gender disparity in primary and secondary education. And that's really the only target and the only thing that really has been measured. And that, I'm happy to say, in terms of primary education, girls are pretty much even with boys in terms of enrollment. But when it comes to secondary education, that changes. And girls are still at a disadvantage for a lot of reasons that I don't have time to talk about, but I'm sure you can think of some of them. And one of them is menstruation, which keeps girls out of school because they don't have private toileting places and they don't have facilities. But there were two other kind of things that were being looked at, and one was to increase the employment of women outside of agriculture. It has gone up globally from 20% to 40%, but that is not true of South Asia, Southeast Asia, or Sub-Saharan Africa, so it still remains about 20% there. And the other was to increase women's share of representation in parliament, and as we know from parliaments, that in this country we don't have parity, and it certainly does not exist globally. It's about 20%. So this is just showing the elementary school. This is showing out-of-school rates for primary school by gender. You can see Sub-Saharan Africa still has the largest problem, and girls are still more disadvantaged than boys. And this is from 2013. One other thing I want to say about women's equality is look at this graph. There are 57 million more men than women under 50. There is no biological reason for that. The reason for that is sex selection before birth. It mostly happens in China and India, which affects a large number of births, but it is a huge problem. Women's life expectancy in all countries is longer than men's, but this disparity at the beginning actually is not unrelated to what we're talking about sex trafficking. You might think that women would become more valuable when they're rarer, but it doesn't work that way. They become more commodities, more to be protected, more to be sold, more to be whatever. So it's a really serious problem that has been pretty much neglected, and I just want to bring that up. Another thing is early marriage, and I'm not going to read this. I'd like you to read it. I'll give you 30 seconds to read it. So this is Ethiopia. In Ethiopia, 50% of girls get married by the age of 15. It has severe medical consequences, as you can read. But it also limits all of their other opportunities in life. And it results in a lot of fistulas, which then lead to social ostracization and no future at all for them. I don't want to present something like this without saying also that there are very effective programs that have been working in Ethiopia, and again, working with police, working with teachers, working with judges, working with local religious leaders that have really made a difference in the areas that the programs have operated. But overall, 40% of women in Sub-Saharan Africa and Asia are married by 18. So it's still, you know, a young marriage age. And in Ethiopia, I'm not sure what the rate is now, but it's definitely been, it's gone down in the intervention areas. It's illegal everywhere. That's not the point, but so sex trafficking and a lot of the other things we're talking about. So MDG 4 is also not going to be met. It was to reduce by 2/3 the under 5 mortality rate. The under 5 mortality rate has been significantly reduced. So that about half the number of children are dying every day, as previously. And I think, I have some statistics on that. So just to show you the graph, so under five is down to about 50 per thousand. It's 48 per thousand now. It's not going to meet the goal. It's not going to meet the goal until 2028, which is 15 years from now. In the meantime, 35 million children will die of preventable causes. So it's not, it looks like great progress, and it is, but we've got a long way to go. The other thing is neonatal mortality, which is a very significant proportion. It's at least 40% in the developing world. But you can see that also in places where services have been improved and you reduce a lot of the other causes of infant mortality, you'll end up with a higher percentage of newborns. And as we know in this country, newborns can cost as much money to keep alive when they're born at very low birth weight as entire budgets of developing countries, for one, because I've had the experience of taking those people through our NICU, and it's embarrassing to tell them what it costs. The major causes of under five deaths, as you can see, are neonatal. Most of these things can be prevented neonatally, and almost all of the things on the other side that are the major causes, so diarrhea, we know how to treat diarrhea, we know how to treat pneumonia, and we know how to treat malaria, and we know how to prevent HIV in children. So we still have a long way to go. All of these things could be addressed, and those 35 million children wouldn't have to die. And last but certainly not least is to improve maternal health. And interestingly enough, this is the one with the most indicators. So, and they kind of break down into reducing maternal mortality and then into achieving access to reproductive health care. So the maternal mortality ratio has improved, and I'll show you a graph about that. It's gone down from about 500,000 women each year to 287,000, although it's not clear how much of that is some of its statistical adjustments that were made. I'm never always completely comfortable with that. Birth with skilled birth attendants, which means somebody who's had training in delivering babies, professional training. It needs to be a nurse midwife, or a doctor. And we can talk a little bit about that too, but about half of all women deliver with skilled birth attendants. In terms of the contraceptive prevalence rate, it went way up in the 1990s. It's maintained kind of a stable level since then, partly due to lack of funding for a lot of these programs. The adolescent birth rate has decreased. Antenatal coverage has increased. About 80% of women have at least one, and I just want to point, at least one prenatal visit. And WHO recommends four or more. And the unmet need for family planning, which I'll talk about in a minute. So this just shows you and the green probably doesn't show up very well at the back. I'm sorry about that. The top line is sub-Saharan Africa, and it's dropped just below 500,000 in 2010. The pink line is the Eastern Mediterranean. So all of them are declining, but sub-Saharan Africa still accounts for the largest proportion. And actually, it's Nigeria and India account for a third of the deaths in maternal mortality. And so that's where a lot of the program investment is going now, to really try to make a difference and to really reach those people in remote areas as well. These are the main causes of maternal mortality. And again, for the most part, these are things that in this country do not kill women, because we have access to emergency obstetrical services. So the issue is how to make sure those services are available to people, to women in communities. And just to show you a little bit about where these deaths are occurring, and this map I could show you for just about anything I've talked about in terms of child mortality, causes of any kind of death. But this is looking at birth by trained attendant. Those are the colors. But you can see that 58 countries, which only represent 58% of the world's births, represent almost all of the deaths. And they have like 17% of the health professionals. So another factor is even countries that have well-trained health professionals or good professional training schools, there's a brain drain to the next level of developing country or to our countries, which is a big problem in terms of personnel. And then another reason for the need for contraceptives is not just to limit family size, but it's to allow the time between pregnancies so that both women and children have good birth outcomes. So this shows you the greatest need. So unmet contraceptive need is for couples who do not want to have a child right away, but are not using any form of contraception. And so this just shows you that the greatest need is in sub-Saharan Africa. And there are about 20 million unsafe abortions as a result of this lack of access to family planning. So people in communities everywhere, couples know what to do when they can't afford to have another child or for other reasons are not able to. So I think this is a huge area that needs to be addressed. And we talked a little bit about violence, and the point is we have no idea how much interpersonal violence there is in developing countries because we don't have any good statistics. So this shows you where intimate partner violence has been reported in the last 12 months. This is a 2013 slide, but it's an underreporting. We know it's a major underreporting, and yet it contributes to the spread of HIV, contributes to maternal mortality, and it contributes to a lot of other health problems in these families. And again, just showing the adult prevalence rate. This is here not because we don't know a lot of this, but now women make up a little more than half of all the people with HIV. It's the leading cause of death of women of reproductive age. So that's a pretty striking change, and I think a major issue that has to be addressed. Access to retrovirals has improved in terms of prenatal transmission. So about 62% of women who need it get it, but that means that there are 40% almost who don't. And I just want to make another point, which is that if we could actually achieve MDG 5, we would be improving MDG 4, because if we reduce maternal mortality, we're going to improve the outcomes of children. There are many studies that show that when a mother dies, health outcomes for children are bad, and there's higher mortality. The other piece of it is that because a lot of the deaths are occurring around birth, those infants are more likely to survive. I'm going to put this up. I'm sure this is familiar to many people in the room, but this had traditionally been used to talk about maternal mortality, but I think it really has to do with all of the child and maternal things we're talking about, because it's always a matter of knowing when you need to seek care, right? You need to know what's wrong, who can do something for me, and what can I do about it. So, you know, we've seen in the world that it's no longer acceptable for a child to die. In most communities, it's not acceptable. We need to make it unacceptable for mothers to die as well. I've worked in Haiti for almost 26 years, and, you know, those of us in maternal and child health and public health, right, we do the things we can make the biggest difference with first. So we started with child mortality because vaccinations make a huge difference. Treating pneumonia makes a huge difference. Treating diarrhea makes a huge difference. Low-tech, easy-to-do interventions. Maternal mortality requires a lot more. And it requires some high-tech interventions, or at least at the facility level, that those services be available. On the other hand, communities, once given the opportunity and seeing that it can make a difference, are really able to mobilize. So we have communities that are a 14-hour walk away from the hospital. We have one hospital for 500,000 people. And once we had an emergency vehicle and a call system, they organized evacuation committees, and the whole village mobilizes when there's an emergency to make sure that not only does the ambulance get called, but somebody's going to take care of the other children. Everybody's got a job to do. And those committees meet sometimes once a week just because they're so happy there's something they can do. So, I mean, sometimes it can be, you know, it's giving people the tools they need to be able to change their circumstances. There are physical delays, geographic delays in terms of reaching care for any health problem. And then the other part that we often don't think about is, yes, there may be a facility there, but are there people there who know what they're doing? Do they have supplies to do what they're supposed to be able to do? And how do they treat the people who come there? We know that in this country as well. So if you're going to be yelling at people for not coming when they were supposed to, or for delivering at a time that's inconvenient for you, that's not going to be very encouraging for getting people there. And this slide, again, is that continuum of care, and I want to make 2 points. One is that, you know, in the community, there are lots of people you need to talk to, and we've, you know, been thinking about that, but there has to be communication in both directions between the community and the healthcare providers, and equally between that primary care unit and the hospital. And I think sometimes we only think about information coming, you know, from the top down. We need to make more venues for information to come from the community back up. And we need to think about how to value the people who have been in those communities taking care of women and children for centuries, and certainly for their lifetime. And this picture is just the woman who's smiling in the lower picture is a traditional birth attendant. And she's surrounded, when I met her, she was surrounded, I think half the village had been delivered by her in her career. And in the other picture, she's being scolded by a health professional because she still wants to deliver babies in emergencies when women would otherwise be walking and delivering on the road. So these women are well respected in their communities. We are not in a position to be going in and saying, no, you have to stop now, we know better. And I'm afraid that's something that's going on in many parts of the world. So I just want to come back to the key messages. Hopefully you agree that most of these deaths are preventable. But what I want to spend a little more time on is some of the equity issues. And so women's equality, I think I don't need to convince you about either. There have certainly been changes, but we have a lot of work to do. But in terms of access and quality of care measures, WHO says a woman needs 4 visits. There's no indication of what kind of services a woman should get in those visits. We need to look whether or not she's going to be treated for anemia, if hypertension is going to be identified. There have to be much better quality controls in assessing whether women really have access to antenatal care and what that is. And they should be able to choose between a place they want to go to and another place, rather than you go here because that's all we've got. We need to think about those marginalized populations. Women with HIV are definitely in that marginalized population. We need to think about people who are geographically remote. And we need to have that continuum of care. It's not just the technology. Yes, we need the technology, but we absolutely need the community mobilization. And we need to have registration of births and deaths. So everything I have presented to you is all based on estimates. In most of the countries where the greatest mortality exists, there is no birth registration and there's very poor mortality registration. We will never get this problem under control until every child gets registered at birth and everybody gets a death certificate. And we take that for granted, but it is a basic right, and it's the only way people have access and are counted. I mean, otherwise you're just not counted at all. I just want to say that we should, we really need to be engaging communities. Women should be advocating for their own health. They should be putting the pressure on their town council people, their representatives in parliament, and we need to stop separating maternal child, and we need to start talking about maternal child family. But it's not just keeping preventable child deaths from happening, it's keeping all preventable deaths from happening. So as we move forward, I'd just like us all to be advocating to keep gender equality, reproductive, maternal child health, and family health in the forefront. And I thank you.